Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org. The crowd went narcoleptic. The most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. That unknown universe is the spiritual universe. It's also the things that you know that you don't know. This is about 12-step recovery. A lot of folks out there have no idea what addiction looks like. They might be addicted to things they have never had an idea, but drugs and alcohol and those things that are deleterious, they don't have a comprehension of that. Why don't you just stop? They don't conceive of it as a disease. They think of it as bad people trying to get good, weak people trying to get strong. We've determined medically, and the insurance companies bail us out on this too, we're sick people trying to get well. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. They do it free of charge because they believe in the work that we're attempting to do. We're hoping it goes out to enough people and it'll help enough people, but you know what? It helps me, and that's part of the program of recovery. We do things that keep us in maximum service to God and our fellows. I'd like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I gratefully like to introduce my co-host. The only problem is my co-host, Harold, who is also my sponsor, is not available. Harold is a family intervention specialist, and he's at a family intervention specialist convention, and even though they had those things, in Dallas, Texas. And he's with his family, so he's not going to be available for the radio tonight. He's a nice backup, and it's a way for me to keep in touch with my sponsor. Service work is giving of yourself without charge or without hope of being remunerated either in the acclaim of men or in finance. And Harold does that, and he gives himself away to do this because he has 25 years of sobriety, and he would not probably be alive if he did not do this. So this is a way of him giving back. The family intervention specialists, and I usually say this, I believe the families are the core of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation, the country, the world. The majority of the problems we have today with drugs and alcohol is because children were not taught correct principles growing up. The chasm is getting larger and larger. Most of the prisons that you go to, they're filled with drug and alcohol-related crime. It's not that many career criminals are out there, but the vast majority were crimes of opportunity done under the influence. So this is our attempt at trying to pull that back, and that's what Harold does. So I'd like to start the show with the third step prayer. I think it's always important to have a spiritual lilt on things. It calls in the spirit in most recovery meetings, and I know in AA and all the other recovery. I'm I would tell you this. I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs. And most of the ones, or almost all the ones I've ever gone to, they usually start with some kind of chant or prayer, and they end. That's called an invocation. That's inviting in the spirit. And they end with a benediction, which is to thank the spirit for being with us. And the rest of the meeting is about gratitude, experience, strength, and hope. Experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift the carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message of recovery. That's what keeps us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. And that next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol, hit a crack, or the next first whatever. The clean house, as outlined in the 12 steps, found in our basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to always trust in God and the process that he gave us. Now, when I say the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the template for all 12-step recovery, because that's where the 12-step first appeared. Everything else has evolved from that template. So I use that template, but we are not AA. We're not NA, and I understand CA is gone now. We're Rum Radio. We're closer to Paranoids Anonymous, where nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. We do the best we can with what we got. Thank you. Like that. Now, when I first get a sponsee, the Big Book tells us, I believe 93, I think it says, go find a prospect and start working on him. It doesn't say have the prospect find you, but that's what we do today, and I've written to that. But it does say go find a prospect and start working on him. So I go find my prospect, and a prospect is a sales term, someone who has the potential for a successful outcome. So I find them, and the way I qualify him, I ask him, have you had enough, yes or no? If he has had enough, he usually won't ask, but some will do. What do you mean enough? Have you had enough pain? Had you had enough humiliation? Had you had enough sorrow? Had you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough? Yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. You can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first things I carry around with me when I'm looking for a sponsee is Clancy's 7 questions. Clancy I is an icon in the AA community. You either love Clancy or you don't, but he has some really good stuff. Do I agree with everything? I don't think anybody in AA agrees with everybody on everything. If you think you're going to get there, it's not going to happen. We all have our own particular program, and we're a group of people that normally would not mix. So we do the best we can, again, and trying to be tolerant and loving of the fellow sufferer. That's what gets us through, because we're not going to agree on all this stuff, but enough. So I like this, and I'll use this because I like it, and it works. And the 7 questions are found on the Rum Radio website. It's under the How to Find a Sponsee tab. Scroll down, and then Rum Radio's in Word, so you can cut and paste anything on the site. So the site is available for printing. If you want to print it out, you print it out for later retrieval. Great. So I carry the questions with me, and I think Stephen Covey had mentioned this, what luck was. Luck was nothing more when preparation met opportunity. So if you're prepared, you're going to have the opportunity, and we're going to call that luck. You're going to luckily find somebody once you're prepared. So I'm prepared, and of course, usually when I do prepare, I do find that sponsee that I'm looking for. And I hand them this, and I say, okay, now there's certain things you have to do. The first thing I need you to do is to answer these 7 questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number, expect your call. Little clean and dry, the Big Book really says we should sit down and talk with the man and see what his expectations are, and that could work too. I'm a little bit more abrupt. I want to cut to the chase immediately. We can talk after he's willing to go through to demonstrate to me that he's willing to go to a length and he's able to take simple instruction. So, okay, so we got that. Now I get it back, and one of the first instructions I give him, doesn't matter so much what he writes, although it gives you an idea where he's at, and then we can have our discussion based on that information instead of doing it in a bubble. And now we have our conversation. I said, okay, one of the first things I need you to do is get a home group. A home group is where you're going to do your meetings of recovery. And there's also your lifeline. I want you to get a list of men's names, as many as you can. 20 or 30 would be nice, but we do what we can with phone numbers and a permission for you to call them. So now you got another life. You got a phone lifeline. And with that lifeline and this home group, I want you to call up every day for the next 30 days, a different man when possible, and ask him permission to recite the third step prayer to him. Third step prayer is found on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason why I do that, and I always give them the reason, we're adults here, and I think it makes it easier when people know what's expected of them and the why of it all. The reason why is that because I want you to get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Hard for most, hard for me, hard for most, not all, most. I want you to connect up in the fellowship. You're going to get to know their names, and they're going to get to know your name. So that's going to make a little bit more, you're going to feel a little bit more inclusive instead of exclusive. So that helps you working into the fellowship. Three, the third step prayer encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, hit a crack, whatever. And the chances are he will not. There's no guarantee. Your sponsee is already into doing service work. That's how it works. By him calling, saying the prayer, he's doing service work for himself and for the other guy. So it's got a good symbiotic relationship developed there. So this is the first, and this is the prayer. It's also called the surrender prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Not amen. There.
Okay, time to introduce our interview. It's going to be a little different tonight. We're still on recovery. Right, we're still on recovery?
This will be a long recovery, yeah, absolutely.
It's G. William McDonald.
That's it. You got it.
Yep.
We've been with you before, Joseph. You interviewed us under the Two Sober Guys, which is an organization we have to help fund halfway houses and groups that are having financial difficulty or whatever kind of difficulty. And you and I talked about that several months ago. But I'm the same guy. By the way, there are two things about that third step prayer. There is no amen at the end of that prayer. And that's pretty significant because it means you're not done yet. You got a lot more to do yet. The amen doesn't come until the fifth step prayer. First time you'll notice it. The other thing I love about the third step prayer, by the way, is that it has got the most powerful promise in all of the Big Book. I'm a firm believer in, if I'm going to give up my Jack Daniels and Jim Beam, I better find a better friend, and it better be somebody that I'm going to get along with, and there better be something in it for me, because I'm an alcoholic. And my sponsor told me 20-some-odd years ago that there are more promises in the Big Book. There's 164 of them, actually, in the Big Book. So there's a lot more than just the 12. And if they don't come true, he said, I'll buy you your next drink. The fact of the matter is, I have found to this day that if I do the requirements that lead to each one of those promises, I will have those promises come true in my life. Now, if I tend to slack off on one or two of the things that have granted me those promises, then they may be taken away temporarily, but I can always get them back. But the greatest promise of all is right in there, and that is, take away my difficulties. Now, you're talking to the boss of the universe here, and you're asking him to take away your difficulties, whatever those difficulties may be. We're going to talk about the financial difficulties in this segment, I'm sure, because I don't know yet of a drunk that came into the an addict who came into the halls of a 12-step room and had their just won the lottery and were driving in with their Mercedes. Most of them were like myself, and they came in with their AA beater that had more dents than it had fenders on it, and we were broke. Well, so I'm asking God of the universe, take away my difficulties, and he's going to do it. But here's my part in it. I have got to then be an example to every other alcoholic or every other drug addict I meet of God's power. In other words, he's going to remove these difficulties from me if I am able to show others that this was a gift from God, not something I did myself. It's a very powerful promise. Anyway, I'm going to get off my soapbox. You there?
This is an opportunity to get on your soapbox.
You probably don't recall. I'm a big book Nazi, as they say. If the book is lying to me, then I'm going to go drinking. So it's just that simple. And I tell that to everybody I sponsor. If you find something in here that's a lie, if you find something in here that is being stated as, and by the way, the book is full of absolutes. All right. It doesn't say this may happen or this could happen. It will say this will happen or this must happen. And if it doesn't, then either A, you didn't do it right, or B, the book is lying. And if the book is lying, why the hell do I want to hang around with a bunch of liars? I used to do that at the bar, and at least I got stoned. You know. So I have yet, after 21 years anyway, to find anything in there that I can argue with or that has not proven to be true. It's that simple. Now, we are going to talk about my book, aren't we?
Oh, no, absolutely. I would, I was
going to... No. Joseph, of course we are. Please.
Yes, yes. I'm from New York.
Right.
We start off with the previous statement. No, we will. yes, we will.
All right. Here's the deal. I wrote Owing, five ways to get out of debt. And by the way, there are only five ways. I wrote that initially as a run along with my website that helps people to get out of debt. Because I was in the industry for many, many years, and in fact, I was a human resource officer, and I was director of special projects with one of the nation's largest debt settlement firms. There was only four executives. All the rest of them were family, and then there was me. Typical of a drunk, you want to be the outsider. And we took that office from one office to well over 100 offices nationwide, and we went international, the first company to go international, in fact. So I'm very proud of the things that we did there, but the problem with it, Joseph, is that we were just cleaning the clocks of the people who could least afford it. The charges that were being levied upon the people who came to us in desperate need of financial help were obscene. They're absolutely obscene. We would take 15% of the debt that they needed to get out of as our quote-unquote, it was a commission is what it was. I don't care what they wanted to call it. And we would take that, and then we would have all kinds of little bills on the side that we would hit them with. It was horrendous. And it was not on, it was, I don't think anybody was surprised when the Federal Trade Commission and the attorneys general all over the country started coming down on the industry. Excuse me, I have to cough. I beg your pardon, but sure. At least I warned you. And they did. They started closing up the weaker companies left and right. And then they took away the quote-unquote fun part of the business, which was we got paid up front. So if you owe $20,000 in debt and we took 14%, we took $2,800 up front before we're going to help you get out of your debt. Tell me what about that is good.
Let me tell you, I used to own a collection agency.
Good for you. Well, I'm not going to say that, but anyway, yeah, big money.
I did. It is what it is, and I'm very familiar with your with your routine, the way that worked. You know, one thing I wanted to bring up, I wanted to before we get into that area so much, I wanted to tell you, when I first came into the program, I wanted to hit it from that angle. I was pretty well financially exhausted. I had a business. It was an ongoing concern, but through the divorce, which was so, it was all, they're all bad, and it's all relative to the person. I understand that. Mine was a bone crusher. It was one of those. She closed my business down, took all my cash, and I had my cash left unattended. She took all my cash. She was trying to put me in the asylum. She figured by stealing all my money that I had put away for so many years that it would have unnerved me, and she was going to be my caretaker. She had it already set up at the VA hospital for me to go in. So when I started back again, I literally started from zero. And but I was pretty I'm pretty savvy business guy. I got into a neon art sculpture business and started making money again. But I was inundated with propositions from people in the program to do these get rich quick schemes. And you know what?
Oh, God.
I got suckered. I don't know how many times I got suckered. You know, if you fool me once, shame on you. You fool me twice. Shame on me.
Yeah.
Shame on me. If you fool me six more times, it's a charm. So I'm a charming kind of guy. You know, because I don't scam anybody, so I don't expect to get scammed, and sometimes that's a problem. But I know when people first come in, most of us come in bankrupt in several areas. We come in bankrupt spiritually first. We come in bankrupt physically. Half the folks coming in are barely hanging on. That's the only reason they came in, because it was either this and the, you know, they walk into the rooms and usually they're accompanied by the Grim Reaper, and the Reaper's just standing there sharpening his sickle. Financially,
we're bankrupt spiritually, physically, and emotionally, and we are bankrupt, period. It is an unusual thing that we come in so close or so much at a bottom, and yet from that can build tremendous lives that can serve so many in the community, including families. And, you know, I don't know when we talked last time whether or not my family had been reunited, but this Christmas, I'll give you an example, it's been 15 years since my son and daughter talked to me. We were that far separated because of the booze. And Christmas Eve, we got together for dinner. It was the first time in 15 years. It was an extraordinary event. In fact, my son just called me this afternoon, take me out for lunch on Father's Day. I mean, this program does such miraculous things if we allow it to. It restores life in all of its fashions. But
so I'm desperate. I'm desperate now to get back into business to make money. And I've made and lost several fortunes. So, you know, it's always easier to lose them than to keep them, believe me. It's harder to keep them sometimes to make them. A lot of folks come in, they're not dollar savvy. At least I was dollar savvy. At least I always made enough money to lose. But a lot of the folks come in, they haven't got a clue what the finances look like. They don't understand about checking accounts and if they even had one or how to put money away. I believe in tithing. I think that's a spiritual principle that's helped me tremendously financially. Yep. And I'm a natural saver. You know, my children would always say, like, I would get the phone book and look up a number instead of dialing 411 because it was a charge of 25 cents or 50 cents. Or whatever.
Well, there's a difference between being a saver and just being a cheap SOB, too.
Okay. I think it's a semantic.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, there's a lot in my background that I don't share because it's usually not necessary. But I can tell you that it's taken me a long, long time to get back out from under. And I have found that the best way and the way that seems to be the most successful is when I'm not doing it for me, but I'm doing it to help somebody else. I know that sounds so trite, but it's a fact. My missus and I were out in the back working on a patio this afternoon, and we were just thinking about all the things that we don't have in the physical sense. And we put that up alongside of the things that we do have. And you can hear one of them barking in the background there. We got four giant dogs. I mean, they're the smallest one, 65 pounds. And they are the love of our life. But when either one of us was drinking, we didn't give a damn about dogs. Are you kidding me? Who's got time to mess with that? That takes away from my drinking. Now she's involved with all of these rescue things, dog rescue facilities and so on. My partner and I are involved with helping 12-step programs fund themselves and get themselves off the, their feet off the ground or on the ground, not off the ground. And by doing those things, stuff seems to happen. Positive things, good things seem to happen.
Let me give you this. It's a scripture out of the Bible. I know we don't do the Bible stuff, but when it's germane, I think it's important. It's let no man seek his own, but every man's another wealth.
That's nice. Yeah, I like that.
Isn't that nice? Yeah, that kind of fits in where we're not so much about us. I think Zig Ziglar said, if you help enough people get what they want, you'll get what you want.
What you want. Yeah. That's right. Absolutely. Well, go back to my book, because I'm going to pull this all together for you, Joseph, by the time we're done.
Okay.
And we'll talk about, opportunities in business and everything else. I was other than the family, I was the highest paid individual with that company. And, excuse me. I would put my money in the bank, and I would feel like hell because I knew darn well the people that we quote-unquote were supposedly helping, we were hurting. Oh, yeah, maybe eventually we get them out of debt if they were willing to put up with all of the pain in the ass that had to go along with it. But most of them weren't, and we didn't care. If they dropped out of the program, okay, good. The money we got, we kept. So I had written the HR policies and procedures manuals for the company, and I decided, it's time to make this available to the average guy. Instead of charging them thousands of dollars to get them out of debt, charge them the price of a cup of coffee or a dinner. And so we created, I got an attorney who's a California attorney, been on the bench in California as a partner. I have a corporate psychiatrist who is a partner. And we created a website called the Ozone, O-W-E, all right? Now, the ozone is designed for people who just are not – maybe they got more common sense than to believe the hype that they see from these TV ads at night. Hopefully they are. And they're looking for a solution that is more reasonable. Well, that's what the ozone is. We give them everything they need, everything that we used when we were talking to guys like you who were in the collection industry. We give them all of those tools, and we show them how to use them. And they can do it themselves. You know, collectors, all they want to do is get their money. And the fact of the matter is the people that owe you the money legitimately created the debt. Now, you know, let's not continue this national thing about it's not my fault, man, you know, and this blame game that we're into. It, you know, I didn't mean to do it. I didn't know the gun was loaded, whatever.
The dog ate my homework.
Yeah, the dog ate my homework, right. No, let's take some responsibility for our actions. And that's what the ozone does. It gives you all of the tools that are legitimate, honest, legal, and appropriate tools to use to get debt-free. And you can do it for next to nothing. Next to nothing. There's no reason to be paying thousands of dollars to some guy who doesn't know as much about it as you do if you read my book. I'm quite serious. You read my book, Owing. And that costs you $2.99, by the way. That's not going to bankrupt you. $2.99, and you will know more about debt and how to get out of it than 90% of the people that you will talk to that come in from these television commercials or dialing for dollars.
I'll give you $2 cash.
I'll front you the 99 cents. Not a problem. I'll do it just for you, Joseph. But that's the fact. See, people get in debt for all kinds of reasons, and not all of it has to do with the fact that they're buying all these yum-yums and wham-whams and TV sets and CDs. There are people who fall into debt because they got sick, because they got laid off. My God, how many of them are out there today because they were laid off? People are losing their homes. All of these things are not necessarily of their own making. So they have, you know, but we have built up this thing about feeling guilty. And of course, the collection agencies love that because if they can make you feel guilty, they can get you to pay. Well, yes, you have an obligation, and you should do your best to pay it. If you cannot pay it and you can't get blood out of a turnip, what do you do? Well, you take some of the alternatives. The worst alternative, of course, is bankruptcy. That would be the last thing I would recommend to anybody. Sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it's all you can do. But it should be the very last of the alternatives to review for getting out of debt.
Why do you say that?
Because of the long-term negative of, impact it has on you. You know, you're looking at 10 years now before this stuff falls off your records. Yes, you can file bankruptcy, and you can find somebody out there that will lend you money to buy a car, but you're going to pay through the nose. You're going to pay twice what it's worth because they're going to get you either up front or in extremely high interest rates, if they will lend to you at all. And the worst of it is, particularly in today's society, if you're looking for a job and you've got a bankruptcy on your record, forget about it. Most people don't. They think that, well, okay, good, I got that debt off my back, and now I don't have to worry about that anymore. And all of a sudden, the machine shop they're working for goes belly up. Now they got to go to, you know, look for a job at another machine shop. First thing they do when they do a background check, and they all do them nowadays because they're so cheap, is find out whether or not you are a credit or a financial risk. And if you're bankrupt, if you file bankrupt, you are a risk to that employer. And if you're in the military, and you do a bankruptcy. Even worse, your promotions are shot. You know, if you're up for an increase in grade, you're not going to get it because of your bankruptcy. So a lot of negatives to it. But there are ways that it can be dealt with. And
how about morally? You think there's a moral component to it? Now, the big book
a moral component to it, but it's not looked upon from that perspective within our society. Morally, Moses was, said every 7 years all debts were to be forgiven. And then there was a year of Jubilee, which was every 50 years, in which all of the slaves were to be set free. Your land was to be returned to you if you had to pledge it for a loan. In other words, everything got reset back to zero. But we don't live that way. Yes, that's God's way of doing it. That was the spiritual foundation for it all. 7 years, debts are forgiven. 50 years, all debts are forgiven and wiped out. But today, yeah, you do it. It's wiped out, but it's not forgotten. And it's held against you. And it's held against you is very detrimental.
All right. So I just come in. I'm broke. I have, especially some of the guys come in. Some of them are coming in barely off the street. Some are in on the street.
Yeah.
So they have, and the problem with, and I've seen this, now I've been lucky. I've never really been that low. Even at the worst I've ever been, I had $5,000 in my pocket. That was the lowest.
Well, you know what, Jim, the Doris, back in the old days. Still got your wristwatch? You don't belong here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was one of the clubs at Post Oak, and there was a fellow that used to come in. There was two. One is very, very wealthy. He had a Bentley, and then we had a guy come in after that with a new Rolls Royce. So there is possibilities that you can be an alcoholic and amass great fortune. And those guys had the harder time. I had to give this guy credit. I don't think the guy with the Rolls made it. He had way too much money.
There is a guy. He's passed on now, but he was one of the originals. And I'm seeing if I can find his thing here. My grand sponsor. Yeah, here we go. His name was Red, and he was one of the first 100 members. He sponsored a guy, Farley. And Farley was a banker who came to his first meeting in Florida in a Rolls Royce. And he set up high-profile meetings for drunks back in the late 30s. So you can come in that way. We hit bottom whenever we decide to stop digging. Farley stopped digging early. And then he gave it – he passed on 12 steps to Billy Goat John, who passed it on to me. He was my grand sponsor.
I like to think of it this way. When you're digging at it.
Most of us come in. I thought it was terrible. I had been driving a brand new Lexus prior to my hitting bottom, and I lost it, and I had to get a pickup truck. And I was so ashamed of myself because I was in the financial industry. And I was so ashamed driving to a meeting in my pickup truck. Oh, jeez. And then I looked around and I realized, hell, most of these guys are driving there in the bicycle or pushing a cart, pushing a Safeway cart. So it's all relative anyway.
I like to think of it. When you're digging out of a ditch, a little less than too much is just enough. When some of us come in, not me particularly, but what I was down was like, it's all relative. If you're a multimillionaire, I heard this story, and it's supposed to be true. This fellow had $100 million. He got suckered into this deal where he lost $10 million. And his friends were telling him, this is a sucker's play. This isn't real. You're going to lose your money. No, no, no. I know what I'm doing. I'm a man of industry, and I'm that smart and like that. Well, it turned out to be business is business sometimes. Everybody comes in with good intentions. He lost the $10 million. He was so, because everybody told him about it and he said no, 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 he was so despondent that he committed suicide over it.
Oh, yeah,
With another $90 million in the kitty.
Yeah. Isn't that bizarre? I know. Yeah.
And when the average guy hears something like that, the brain cells cannot connect. There's no synapses that are going to make that connection.
Yeah, that's right. And it is almost too much for the rest of us to think that we could even consider it. But, you know, let me give you some frightening statistics of what we're looking at today.
Sure.
According to the New York Times, all right, there are 100 million Americans who are now, at this moment, living in poverty. That's a lot. That's a big number. That's 30% of the entire population.
Yeah, it is.
This is the population of a nation that once was the envy of the entire world. And here, 30% of us are living in poverty. Even worse is 50% of the kids that are living in Detroit, Cleveland, and there was one other one, Detroit and Cleveland anyway. 50% of the kids are living in poverty. Right? So we're losing an entire generation of children, and we can't afford that.
Well, I think that goes back to the family as well. But finances, most people divorce because of finance. That's the bottom line. That's always been fighting over money because there isn't any.
Yeah, more than sex or anything else, it's usually it's money. You're right, absolutely. So anyway, there are ways out, however. And you were asking earlier, is it moral? Yes, of course it's moral. When you look at particularly credit card companies, let's hit on them for a second. If you have a credit card and you've been paying on it for 10 years, I don't care what you owe on that credit card today, you have paid off 3 or 4 times over the amount of the money or the amount of the purchase that you originally put on there. And that's because of the horrendous interest rates. So, do you owe it to them? Yeah, you owe them the original amount plus some fair, reasonable return on their risk. Oh, quiet, boys. Sorry about that. My dogs get all emotional about this.
Excuse me. You do? Just tell them we'll have them on next week, and that'll keep them quiet.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm going to get them out of here, and then we can continue to talk, hopefully.
Sure.
Go on. I just let them all run away. Oh, jeez. All right. So, where were we?
Okay.
Oh, we're talking about kids being in. We're losing generations of children. Yes.
Right. Families, finances, marriages. Now, of course, in sobriety, now the guy comes in. He has no money. Now, some of these guys are. The married men usually, and sometimes the wife has been carrying the load. You know, we have every alcoholic should have an Al-Anon. I don't think two alcoholics should mate. I think it should be a law. I think every alcoholic should have an Al-Anon. And I think that will make it work. I think it's a little harder with two alcoholics, but hey, what do I know? So the wife has been working, and now he's back.
Hang on. I'm sorry. I've got to get out of the house. The dogs have taken over. We can't handle money. We can't handle anything, particularly when we first get in. And if you got an Al-Anon wife or husband, you got a better chance of making it because at least they're going to be on you. But anyway, there we go. All right. Now, are we still on the air?
Yes, we are. We've just been picked up by the ASPCA, as a matter of fact.
Every one of our dogs are rescue dogs. Like I said, the smallest one is 60 pounds, 65 pounds.
Wow. So it took more of them to rescue you, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so some guy comes in. He has no job, has probably little prospects of a job, has no money in his pocket, maybe enough for a cup of coffee out with the group first couple of days he's in the program or she's in the program. What are you going to do for them? Is that where you're going to go with this?
Yeah, what would I tell them? Okay, look, Chief, you know, look, we're going to try to give you hope, you know, that the sun's going to come out, you're going to get sober. That's the impetus, is our experience, strength, and hope, that we give hope.
Yep.
That's what we sell in recovery. We sell hope to the hopeless.
Yep.
We got to let them know that this is the bottom, and then there's nowhere up from here. But on practical terms, nobody knows what to tell them. How am I going to make money? I don't have money for phone. I don't have a place to take a shower. You know, like living on some, when they first come in, and this is the extreme, living on the survival level, you never know how tough it is until you're living on survival. It takes all your energy and all your day to do such minimal things, to travel, all of it. What do I tell them?
I understand. Well, you first got to get them stabilized. And if they've come in and this is their first few days in the program, you first got to make sure they got a place to stay for the night. And that may mean a homeless shelter or whatever. We're working with a homeless shelter down here in Phoenix right now that is affiliated with a 12-step club. And it's not a healthy situation, but at least there is a place for them to sleep. Now, the next part of that is making sure that they're fed. All of this has nothing to do with their bills at this point, but we're talking raw survival here. Once the body has started to calm itself down through the lack of alcohol for a few days, through good nutrition, through getting decent rest, then you start very slowly working on, oh, she's now going to let the dogs out. Then you slowly start to work on get a job. You know, if you're a nuclear scientist, fine. But right now, get a job at a Circle K or some other place because you just need to be able to take care of yourself. Then, you have to be here to understand what I'm going through right now. I'm being surrounded by dogs who...
want your attention, and they're not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, they are not going to take no for an answer. No, they're not. Okay, I think I'm free now. So we take care of the basics. Get a place to sleep, get some food in your belly, get a job, and then after you have had a chance to see that there is a possibility of life after alcoholism or narcotics, then we will address your obligations. You know, ninth step doesn't come right after step one. So when you start making your amends, you do it when you're capable of doing it. If that means that you're ending up being sued by, a credit card company, then unfortunately that's just going to be what it is. But you can't get blood out of a turnip, and they know that, and they don't want to sue. They would rather have you settle, even if it's only for pennies on the dollar. So you could always get the debtors to hold off. But they don't want to force you into a bankruptcy because then they're not going to get anything. And they don't want to bring a lawsuit because it costs money. They will if they know you've got money and they think you're hiding it. But if they don't think you've got any money, they're not going to waste their corporate dollars to send an attorney to fight you in court to get nothing. There is one exception to that, and that's Citicorp. Citicorp has a reputation for being pretty vicious. I was involved with a situation with a client in Texas in which we had come to a negotiated settlement that was not quite what Citicorp wanted. They wanted 90 cents on the dollar. We offered them, I think it was 50 to 60 cents on the dollar, which was higher than we normally do. And so they decided to sue. And this was in Texas. And they actually flew corporate attorneys out from New York to Texas to prosecute the case. Why? Only so they could show everybody else that they were hard ass and that they weren't going to sit back and be kicked around by deadbeat debtors.
Deadbeat debtors.
Well, they were the creditors.
Right.
Our client that they were going after owed them the money. So,
They
were indebted to them, and they were just, this was just to show that they weren't going to be pushed around. Well, you know, if somebody is going to spend that kind of time and that kind of effort doing that kind of thing, those people, God bless them, they'll get their just rewards. Anyway, those situations do occur, but they're rare. They really are. Citicorp, I know, has gotten a lot more sensible over the last few years. This was probably, I don't know, 8, 10 years ago when they did this. But that was before things really blew up financially for this country. And now it's a situation where they know. They just can't put you to the wall anymore. So, is it moral? Yes, it is. Is it right? Yes, it is. Why? Because you're going to make it good, but you're going to make it good to the best of your ability. We show you how to go about doing that. There's paperwork, and it has to be done in a certain format, and it has to be done in a certain time frame. And most folks, you know, get all confused by that kind of thing. And that's why these debt settlement companies out there are able to charge such horrendous fees, because they know people just are confused by the paperwork, and they're confused, and they're intimidated by the phone calls. When all they really need is somebody to hold their hand. We hold their hand, and we show you all of that in my book.
Okay, the name of the book is Owing?
Owing, O-W-I-N-G, 5 Lessons on Surviving Your Debt. And it's on Amazon, Kindle, and will be eventually, I think, the next less than 30 days, it'll be at Barnes & Noble and quite a few others. The hard copy will be more expensive, only because it's hard copy. And the website
binding.
To which... I'm sorry?
It requires binding.
Yeah, the binding, right. Leather binding with gold, with gilt edges, right?
I'll go to $299 for the... I'll go to $299 with the leather and the gold leather.
Yeah, good for you. Hey. you are a good businessman. At least you're a good salesman.
I am a good salesman. I am. Most people think they are. Most men think they're really good at playing poker and at sex.
Right.
But I am a good salesman.
But most of us are lying to each other in both of those other regards.
Really.
All you got to do is ask. get me into a poker game with a guy who thinks he's the king of the poker hill, and I stand a pretty good chance of walking away with some of his money. You know, as far as the sex thing, I don't know. I'm celibate, so anyway. Long story. That book is tied in with, although it's a standalone book, but it is tied into the O Zone, and that's OWE Zone, ZONE, the O-Zone, which is the website that gives you all of the documents that you need. We, like I said, we have a psychiatrist, a corporate psychiatrist who's on the board who will work with you to help you understand what it is that you're going through, which is something none of these debt settlement companies will do for you. We do have the family attorney who was on the family court, a judge, was a family court judge out in California, who is also on the board, who will help as best they can without giving legal advice, because every state's a little bit different, but for the most part, you know, the general rules are the general rules. So we will stand behind everybody that decides to come with us if they need that help. If not, just get the book. You will know everything you need to know about that. And I covered, like I say, it's 5 easy lessons on surviving your debt. Well, the 5 lessons are really pretty straightforward. You know, chapter 1 is all about the history and why the book was written and that kind of thing. And then we get into the problems that people face. And then we have we break it down from debt settlement. We talk about bankruptcies, the 6 different forms of bankruptcy. We talk about credit counseling. We talk about refinancing your home, which is another bad way to go about it, by the way. You know, you turn an unsecured debt into a secured debt where they can take your home if you don't make a payment is not, in my estimation, real sensible. But it is another alternative that's out there and available for people.
You know, that would be great news. Now, we talked about the extreme guy coming. Now, some other folks come in. They have the wife. They have a job. But they've been poor stewards as far as their finances, because the drink was number one and the drugs were number one. And little by little, they were able to keep their head above water. And, of course, my experience is quite a few alcoholics and drug addicts, especially the alcoholic, I don't know that much about a heavy drug addict, are good employees because they're counting on that paycheck to keep
to
them
into
in
the bar.
Alcohol. Yeah, they'll come in every day, they'll come in on time, they'll do their job, and they'll leave when the whistle blows. And they'll be steady eddies. And as long as they're doing that, that's part of the denial. Hey, if I'm an alcoholic, I would not be able to maintain my job. I'm feeding my family, I'm paying my, although the debt keeps piling up little by little, squeezing out. You know, there's only so much. They'll call it disposable income. What do they call it? Discretionary income.
Discretionary, yes, right.
Used to be disposable. Now we've turned it into discretionary. I think after discretionary, it'll come into, what would be the next word after discretionary? Unavailable.
Income. We'll find some other 1984 was it 84 that did the double speak?
Thought Police. Yeah, that was double speak.
Yeah. You know, we'll come up with a new euphemism to cover what we really mean. It's like
right. In other words, there's leftover money. The only problem is there isn't any leftover money. You know, the poor man goes up to the rich man and says, "Hey, you know, can you give me some extra? If you have some extra, can I have some?" And the rich man says, "Let me tell you, Chief, there's never any extra."
Right.
And there isn't any. There's never one man doesn't want to give up, and that's all part of recovery, is trying to be of maximum service to God and your fellows, and being charitable. That's charity is really a big key. To be charitable in your, if you have not charity, you know the scripture says you might as well not even bother with the rest of it if you have no charity. But of course, charity begins at home. You know, you gotta straighten up the house. You gotta straighten up your own finances. Now, so this would also be, your book is mostly for that kind of person, right? More so than the guy just coming up off the street would be the guy.
It is, well, yes, and I say that it's a qualified yes. It's I don't give as I did here with you earlier. I don't give how to, as such as what should you do first. You know, get a place to sleep, get food, get a job. I don't cover those areas. But if you are aware that you are in trouble financially and you don't know how to get out, then my book is for you. It is I would suggest that folks go up and take a look at the website first, because that's free, and they'll give them a feel for what it is that we're involved with and what we're doing for them. That's theozone.com. That's theozone.com. Ozone. And in the book, of course, is Owing, 5 Lessons on Surviving Your Debt. But the Ozone, they can go up there and ask questions, and we'll respond to them as best we can. They can leave messages for us. Believe me, it takes a lot before it starts costing you any money to do business with me.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know why old men study the scriptures, William?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's I'm cramming for the final exam.
There you go. You've heard that from someone else. You know what's funny about that little sideline? I made that up about 4 years ago.
You did?
And I made that up for about 4 years ago. And I used to teach Sunday school. And when I taught Sunday school, I'd always start with a joke. So I used to go like to the website, I'd go to the different pastors. Joel Osteen has his own deal of all his jokes that he does, right? And so I would grab his jokes because he was saying the same jokes I was finding, because, you know, these were church jokes. You know, you got a certain platform. And I was cruising the internet, and I went to George Carlin, right? And I'm looking at I love Carlin, some of his.
Funny guy.
Funny guy. And I looked, and the joke was there. My joke was on his website.
Yep.
So one of two things happened. Either it went all the way around. Of course, some people say, well, maybe you heard it, you don't remember. I don't believe so. I don't think that was the case. It could have been, but I don't think so. So it either went all the way around and he heard it, which happens quite often, or there's a universal consciousness. Or I had heard it, not remembered it came from him. Well, but the only problem is he's dead now, and I'm the only one who knows.
So now you can claim it 100%. Yeah.
It's mine. It's yours. No doubt about it.
Well, my man, I don't know where else to go with this. Like I said, I've got several books out on it, on finance. So Going for the Gold is another one of my books, but that's on buying gold and silver coins, and that's obviously not for the guy who's scrambling to put his first two nickels together. But
recovery is really about getting back into the stream and then being a maximum service to God and your fellows. So, and, you know, I know as you're becoming to that age now, you want to give back. I mean, it's real important for you on a spiritual level to make sure that you're giving a legacy of your wisdom and your knowledge for the love of God and the fellowship. I know that's why you're doing this.
Yeah. Well, you want to be my PR man? I like what you're saying. No, you're right. I can't stay clean and sober unless I'm giving it away. It doesn't stay fresh. I sponsor people as far away as Serbia. I've got one sponsee in Serbia that has been sober now for 90 days, all on working the big book with me. Through IM messages, and I keep getting these letters back from this individual saying, I shared this with so and so, and I shared that with so and so, and they thought that was, and I think, wow, here's this little old guy in Scottsdale, Arizona, and He is impacting the lives of people he's never going to see in Serbia, of all places. I mean,
isn't that great?
And that's
great
all because
feeling?
Of this program. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. That's a great feeling to know that God has still got your hand in your life because you have your hand in helping his children.
Yeah, yeah. And I learned all of that through this program. All of it I learned through this program.
Now, there's one question you probably don't get into it. Do you have anything on the spiritual level as far as financing? Now, my church goes for the tithing. I will say, okay, if you want, you know, it's spiritual law. A lot of folks don't realize it, but it's in the Bible. I did a study.
Yep.
There's like it starts from Adam, and it goes up to Malachi. I mean, it's just like the whole Bible is with tithing. You know, you think the first fruits of God to acknowledge that God owns everything and that we are stewards of all that.
Stewards of it. That's right.
Yeah, and we give so much back. Now, I've experienced by doing my gifts and offerings that my finances always seem to be, I always have enough. Do you get into that at all, or that's not really your area?
Not in that book. I have done that. I have actually put on seminars on that from my church. It's been quite a while now since I've done them. But, yeah, I'm a firm believer in that. You know, I talked earlier about the year of Jubilee. That year of Jubilee, when they were giving back
land.
When they were tithing, the Hebrews would come together, and that tithing was not like, you know, God, I got to leave some money here. No, it was one giant party to thank God for everything he'd given them. And, you know, the money went for fatted calves and lamb and figs and all kinds of good food, and there was music and dancing. There was joy in it because it was all God's to begin with. And in giving back to him, you were giving back to him while he was, again, still sharing it with you.
Acknowledging that it's all his. Besides, a lot of people don't understand that with the study. They say, look, I don't have enough money to make ends meet. Now you want me to give 10% of that away.
Yeah.
I can't make an ends meet. And I'll tell you this, and I've had the experience. If you do that, the ends will meet. Sometimes you don't know how, but they just happen to meet. One, two, and by doing that, you're going to get used to doing your bookkeeping for your home, because now you're going to have to see where the money is going and how much food. And now you're organizing your finances, and you know what? And the Lord will bless you, and you'll be able to pay the rest of the debt. That's my experience.
Yeah, that's you're right on the money. You're absolutely right on the money. It's an amazing. It's a miracle the way the thing works. And yet, when you think about it, it's common sense.
Yeah. A lot of people don't get it because they're not there. Nobody's ever taught them correct principles. So when they hear this stuff, it's kind of alien to them. Like, what's this guy talking about? That's not program. Where's he coming from? Keep an open mind. You know, the big book has contempt prior to investigation. Nothing will keep a man in utter ignorance or bar from any argument than the concept of contempt prior to investigation. A mind is like a parachute. It works best when open. Who I am, what I'm talking about. Look to see what I'm saying. Look for the principles, not the personality. That's why it's in the big book, because we have met the enemy and he is us. We don't believe these things. You could tell a drunk anything. You just can't tell him much. William, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, listen, anytime I can hear a good quote from Pogo, I'm a happy man.
Well, I didn't come up with that one, but I
no, Pogo.
I might as well.
From Pogo. Yeah.
I know.
Joseph, it was a pleasure, and let's do this again sometime. You know, whenever you're hard up for a guest, just give me a jingle.
Oh no! I wouldn't even. You know, you're a great guest. I mean, you're solid recovery. You know, and you want to give back. I mean, it's kind of a miracle. There was one fellow I wanted to interview, and he says, "Look, I'm a nobody kind of deal. Why would you want to interview me?" And I says, "Let me tell you, the people of note have the better jokes, but the common joke."
Yeah, that's about it. They got better jokes, yeah, but they practice them. That's all. Yeah.
And the common Joe has a story to tell, and who can weigh a miracle?
Yeah.
So I'm saying, no, you're a miracle.
And when you listen to a guy who's just talking to you, and that's the miracle of our program. When some guy, you know, one drunk sits down with another and starts to tell him about his story, all of a sudden you get through to that person, to the drunk who's still drinking. And it's true in any field. When you sit down and you just talk and be yourself, and don't try to be the comedian or the elitist, people can relate to you then. And say, oh, hey, that guy makes a little bit of sense anyway, you know?
Sure. Well, let me tell you this, just for, take a minute. On the website, I did the post on the man on the bed. It's the AA icon. And
yes,
what I determined,
right.
When I determined the man has a book, the fellow in the foreground is supposed to be Dr. Bob, Bill W., and Bill D., right?
The
first three,
mm-hmm.
The first group,
right.
Actually. And the man in the foreground has a book in his hand. Well, that depicts of a situation, a scenario that happened in 1935, four years before the publication. Yeah, so
huh?
The book he had in his hand was probably the Bible. But that's the only books they would let. Yeah, because it was the only books they let in on the high school. Wise guys.
Yep, you're right.
And
you know, back in the old days, they used to make you do the first three steps outside the doors of AA, and you did the third step on your knees. And then
right. They called it, the surrender. I have that. So, and I wrote to that, and I said, okay, so we had Dr. Bob was there. And then Bill D., the guy on the bed, is a lawyer. And Bill W. is the chief architect of AA. So this thing of ours started with a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief.
Chief. and the doctor was a proctologist, which is, makes sense.
That's it. And before the big book, the point is it was one drunk talking to another. It's still the most powerful tool we have in the program today. And he got sober and stayed sober.
Yeah. And I you know, I can't recall the name of the story. It was in, I don't even know if it's in the fourth edition, but in the third edition, about the guy who got sober in Europe. He was a military man, and sober by just reading the big book. He didn't have anybody around him who knew anything about sobriety. That story is significant to me because of what I'm doing right now with this these people in Serbia. They don't have a big book over there. They had to go up, and they got it on the Internet, and they downloaded it from the Internet. In the translation, you can get sober wherever, as long as the hand of AA is there, as long as we reach out, and it can be just sending somebody a big book. You don't have to.
The big book originally was for people who couldn't get to meetings, and then they gave them a big book with like a how-to book to get sober, and then sponsorship came later. You were the guy going to the hospital, and that's how it works today. So I'm hoping you tell the guys in Serbia about Rum Radio, because if they plug into it from Serbia, hopefully a Google Chrome will do the interpretation for them.
Good. I will let them know. I will.
Yeah, it's good on sponsorship. If you looked at the site, it's all programmed, because that's all we need.
Yep. Why don't you give me a buzz tomorrow? I'd like to visit with you a little bit.
Sure.
Outside of the program here.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, William, and Need to close down. We went over a little over, but that's okay. I like to have fun.
Oh,
if I'm having fun,
okay.
I don't want to stop. thank you. And like usual, Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi. We're over 300,000 hits to the website. Yeah. I think it's 128. No, I forget now. We're in a lot of towns and cities, mostly by word of mouth. So if you need sponsorship information, and some of the stories are really good. A lot of people don't know some of the stuff we have on there, AA history. It really makes a good platform of understanding. One drunk talking to another is still our most powerful tool. So, again, thanks again, William, and we'll see you on the radio, Rum Radio.
You take care, my friend. Good talking
to
you, Joseph. Bye-bye.
Righto. Have a good night. Bye.